Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for November 27, 2017. This is David Corey along with my co-host Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. Hello, Richard.
Hey, David. Good evening. And good evening to everybody out there in radio and podcast land. I hope everyone had a nice Thanksgiving day and ate lots of good turkey and got fat for the afternoon and hopefully starting to work it off as we get ready for Christmas. There's plenty of news to catch up on tonight, but first I'll remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, comments, and questions, so you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, the toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008, and I want to remind our veterans that this show is called the Veterans News Hour. This is your show. We're just the voice for you guys. And women, you know, we're the messengers here. But we need you to give us some input about what's going on out there, how you're feeling, what's the VA doing for you, what are they not doing for you, what are your complaints, what are you experiencing, are you a young vet coming back from Iraq or Afghanistan and you want to voice some concerns about how you're being treated by the VA, or you're an older vet from Vietnam who is still suffering and still not getting the attention that you need. You know, over the holidays, I was with a veteran, Bill, and we were playing golf. I met him for the first time, and we were paired up together, and my son. And he's an Air Force veteran. He's a Vietnam veteran, served from 1969 to 1971, suffers from diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure, and various other diseases that are all Agent Orange presumptions, and they're service-connected. He had no idea, David, he had no idea that he had that he could apply for compensation, being a Vietnam vet, suffering from diabetes. In fact, he was told by the VA that he's not eligible. So I'm meeting with Bill later this week, but you know, this is just another example. Here we are decades into this, and we still have this erroneous and horrific attitude by the VA toward our men and women who have served this country honorably. And I know I'm starting off here, David, with a hot one, so I'll send it back to you.
Well, thanks. Yeah, we do welcome our listeners to call in. Again, as Richard said, our number is toll-free 1-888. 627-6008, 1-888-627-6008. So give us a call. Let us know your thoughts. We've got a lot of important news on a lot of veteran issues tonight. So let me start with one that's been on a lot of veterans' minds for actually several years now, many years. That's the ongoing topic of how to reform and improve the VA healthcare system. Many people know that the VA is vastly understaffed right now, mostly on the healthcare side. They've got about 40,000 job vacancies across the country. 40,000, that's just incredible. And meanwhile, the VA is still recovering from the bad publicity from about the year 2014 with the Phoenix VA Medical Center, but other medical centers, VA medical centers around the country, where it came to light that veterans were enduring very long waits for care, and not only that, but at many of these facilities, the VA employees were actually falsifying the data, the statistics of the wait times to make it appear that there really weren't waits, and it would allow the upper-level managers to get their other bonuses. So in the last several years, there have been efforts to improve the system, and those are continuing under the current VA Secretary Dr. David Shulkin. Let's talk about some of those things. We're seeing more activity recently in Washington as Congress, the VA, and a number of veteran service organizations. They're trying to work on details of a plan that would not only replace the current Veterans Choice Program, which allows veterans to receive care in the private sector under certain circumstances, but would also enable the VA to modernize large parts of its healthcare system. The plan, which the VA has entitled the Veterans Care Act, and CARE in this situation, an acronym for the words Coordinated Access and Rewarding Experiences, another tortured Washington, D.C. acronym there. Veterans Care Act, it was unveiled earlier in November. It has an overall structure that most veteran groups applaud, partly because they had some input, but they don't like everything about it. The House and Senate Veteran Affairs Committees are now working on their own replacement plans for the CHOICE program to try to include more safeguards and more details to improve access to care. As a sign of possible controversy about that, though, some of the federal workers' union members have criticized the plan, saying it's, quote, a total dismantling of the department, which would jeopardize veteran services. And that's according to the national president of the American Federation of Government Employees, a gentleman named James J. David Cox, Sr. He was quoted in a Military Times article earlier this month as saying, quote, it's taking resources out of the VA and shifting them into the private sector. It's voucherizing veterans' health care, unquote. Well, no doubt veterans will want to follow this story as events continue to unfold in Washington over the coming months and actually into the new year, since I don't think it's going to get solved before the end of December. So over to you, Richard.
Very good, David. Yeah, we're going to be watching that very closely. In earlier today, November 27th, the veterans organization called Disabled American Veterans issued a press release stating in part, and I quote, in Washington, D.C., the end of 27 has been packed with important legislative roundtables, hearings, and congressional meetings. A number of Department of Veteran Affairs health care reform proposals are being considered by Congress in legislation to address the future of VA's community care or CHOICE program, a very important program, and a bill to conduct a review of VA's assets and physical infrastructure were at the top of the list. The House and Senate Veterans Affairs Committee, HVAC/SVAC, has been working on two major legislative proposals that would significantly change how care in the community is provided, to include a draft bipartisan Senate measure, the Caring for Our Veterans Act, and legislation introduced by the House called the VA Care in the Community Act, H.R. 4242. Both plans propose models for creating an integrated network of VA and community providers. Both include provisions that address when and under what circumstances enrolled veterans will have access to health care services in the VA's community care network. Over to you, David.
Well, it's also noteworthy that another veterans group, Concerned Veterans of America, is pushing for a more comprehensive revamping of the entire VA healthcare system that relies more on the private sector than ever before. And it's ideas like this that have led to opponents saying that they're trying to dismantle the VA system. I think the truth is somewhere in the middle. But in a November 22, 2017 opinion piece published in the online publication called The Hill, Concerned Veterans of America Executive Director and Marine Corps and Iraq War veteran Dan Caldwell wrote as follows, and I quote, in 2014, it was uncovered that veterans at the Phoenix VA hospital were waiting so long for care that some died as a result. Soon after, other scandals at VA facilities across the country revealed the appalling quality of care many veterans were receiving and exposed rampant dysfunction at the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. As a temporary fix to provide relief and swiftly deliver quality care to our nation's veterans, Congress created the Veterans Choice Program. The intent of the program was to allow veterans who would have to wait more than 30 days or have to travel more than 40 miles to the nearest VA treatment facility to use their benefits to get care from a private physician in their local community. In practice, however, the Veterans Choice Program has been poorly implemented and long wait times continue to plague the system. What's more, the Veterans Choice Program recently faced a budget shortfall and will likely run out of money again next year. The program doesn't work because it leaves the VA bureaucracy largely in control of the veterans' health care and fails to deliver the timely, quality care lawmakers envisioned. Dan Caldwell went on to say, in his opinion article, that this must change. Veterans deserve the best care available and control over the health care choices. The best way forward, as Concerned Veterans of America has recommended in their 2015 report called Fixing Veterans Healthcare Task Force, is to fully empower veterans to decide when and where to get care. And now Representative Doug Lamborn of Colorado has introduced a bill, it's called the Veterans Empowerment Act, that would reform the VA health system and truly expand veterans' health care in an effective and sustainable way. The bill would restructure the Veterans Health Administration, also called the VHA, their existing medical facilities into a government-chartered nonprofit corporation that can better adapt to the changing health care needs of our veterans. The bill would also create a veterans' health insurance program that enables veterans to use their benefits either inside or outside of the VA system. And it increases oversight and transparency to prevent future cases of abuse and mismanagement. Dan Caldwell went on to say, quote, the measure will strengthen the VA by modernizing the department and freeing up the VA health system to concentrate on its original purpose, which is to care for veterans with service-connected disabilities. Those are the changes veterans want to see, according to Dan Caldwell. In a 2017 nationwide survey, veterans were overwhelmingly supportive of VA health care reform, and more than 90% were in favor of, quote, giving veterans more choices in their health care by allowing them to receive health care services from medical facilities or health care providers outside of the VA's existing medical system, unquote. According to Dan Caldwell, Congress now has the opportunity to make this a reality by passing the Veterans Empowerment Act. And they must do so so veterans who have given so much to this country can finally receive the care that they've earned. I think that's an interesting perspective. The particular organization, Concerned Veterans of America, has a reputation among other veteran groups as being more politically conservative and going further than most of them as far as emphasizing private health care over the existing VA system. But we'll see what happens. Rick, over to you.
Yeah, I would agree with that, David. That is kind of surprising, but a nice surprise. In other news affecting veterans, earlier this month, the VA launched the Rapid Appeals Modernization Act program. Rapid Appeals Modernization Program. And its acronym, of course, is RAMP, R-A-M-P, which lets veterans choose from multiple different paths to resolve pending claims. The VA began the 18-month implementation plan when President Donald Trump signed the Veterans Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act into law in August of this year, which created a new claims review process. The goal of RAMP is to give veterans the earliest possible resolution of their pending claims with the VBA. The new legislation creates three options for veterans dissatisfied with the initial decisions on their claims. They can seek higher level review by a regional office on the same evidence presented to the original claims processors. In other words, they can submit new evidence or have a hearing, which to me suggests a very high likelihood of the same bad decision being rubber stamped, particularly since the new legislation removes the VA's current legal duty to assist veterans after an initial decision. And low-level VA employees will be the ones making the decisions on review. That would be scary. They can file a supplemental claim with a regional office that would include the opportunity to submit additional evidence, which to me means just more time spinning around on the hamster wheel trying to guess what will be enough evidence to satisfy the VA. Or they can appeal directly to the Board of Veteran Appeals, resulting in a possible hearing and or the opportunity to submit additional evidence. The BVA would have two separate tracks for appeals, those cases where the veteran doesn't want a hearing and doesn't want to submit new evidence, which supposedly will be the faster of the two tracks, or cases in which the veteran wants a hearing and wants to submit new evidence, which likely will still involve years of waiting. The problem is the legislation does nothing to fix the current backlog of between 450,000 and 500,000 claims currently on appeal. The legislation does nothing to boost the number of VA employees handling claims and appeals. The system clearly needs to be reformed, but in my opinion, this legislation would just replace one flawed system with another flawed system. Sorry to be the bearer of bad news, but that's how I see it. And we had Mr. John Wells on the program last week, who has been following this very closely with his organization and going back and forth to Washington, D.C. I think he concurred on his opinion that we're basically swimming in high seas, and unfortunately for the veterans, the end in sight doesn't look that promising. Back to you, David.
I agree, Richard. And if anything, I think the so-called Appeals Improvement and Modernization Act, which was given a lot of fanfare by some major veteran groups, but certainly by the VA, which was the major proponent of it, really and truly just will make it easier for the VA to find ways to deny appeals. And if anything is done faster, it'll be essentially to make the denials faster. So we'll have to see. But as you discussed, this new Rapid Appeals Modernization Program is really over the next 18 months, the implementation plan, so that in a year and a half from now, we should see the full effect of the new legislation appearing. Meanwhile, as I said, as you said, Richard, encourage our listeners to go back and listen to last week's show, because John Wells from Military Veterans Advocacy had a lot of great insight and perspective about that legislation. That's a great thing about BBS Radio, and that all the shows are archived as podcasts. You can go back and listen to them. So listen to last week's show from November 20th with John Wells. A lot of great insight there. Got some other news around the country, and you know, in case our listeners wonder how we gather all this news, Richard and I try to cast a broad net out there and pull in information daily and weekly. I subscribe to quite a few email newsletters from national and even smaller state and smaller organizations, veteran organizations, including the VA, to see what's going on, because there's constant changes. And here's an example of that. The New York City Veterans Alliance issued a press release last week regarding New York City's new anti-discrimination law that provides some important legal protections for veterans and service members. That law, which applies in New York City, took effect on November the 18th of this year. According to the press release from the New York City Veterans Alliance, the new law, which is Local Law 119-2017, it protects veterans and current members of all the armed services, as well as the Guard, the Reserves, and even the Commissioned Corps, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, NOAA, and the U.S. Public Health Service. So basically any uniformed service member is covered by this law. It applies to both employers and prospective employers. So if a service member or a veteran is applying for a job and they weren't hired because of discrimination, because of their veteran status, example, let's say they're in the National Guard or Reserves, and the employer is afraid that if they get hired, they're going to get activated and it will affect the company. This is an example where the law would apply, but there are federal laws already that cover that. But the law would also apply to real estate agents, management companies, landlords, and property owners for housing situations, and all businesses and facilities that are open to the public as far as from a customer's perspective. The law does a number of things, and I'll summarize those for you here, and this is courtesy of the New York City Veterans Alliance. The law prohibits discrimination in the terms or conditions of employment or any limit on employment and advertisements, interviews, or other statements because of a person's military service. It also prohibits discrimination against a person in the sale or rental of any housing or the communication of any discrimination in advertising because of a person's military service. It also prohibits denying a person the full and equal enjoyment of any accommodation, services, facilities, or privileges of a public place because of the person's military service. And it also prohibits retaliation against the person for opposing discrimination, reporting discrimination either internally or externally, or for cooperation or assisting in the investigation or proceeding relating to these actions. So it covers a lot of different things. The law is applicable in New York City, obviously, and it does some additional things. For instance, it says that lawful sources of income, such as GI Bill educational benefits, cannot be the cause for refusal of housing by landlords or brokers who otherwise might make a decision and deny housing for that reason. On a more positive note, though, privileges and preferences based on a person's military service are not prohibited, such as discounts and promotions offered by businesses. If you want to file a complaint, if you're in New York City and you think you've been affected by this discrimination, you can file a complaint with the New York City Commission on Human Rights. You must do so within 1 year of the Discriminatory Act. Individuals can also bypass the commission and file a complaint in the New York State courts up to 3 years after the last discriminatory act. Violators may be required to pay damages, a fine, or be subject to additional mandated training or posting requirements. So, to me, what's interesting is that many states already have similar laws, and if anything, I'm a little surprised that it's taken this long for New York City to adopt an ordinance, given the very large population New York City. But if you're in New York City and you think you've experienced discrimination because of your military service, you can contact the New York City Commission on Human Rights by calling in New York 311 or the Commission's helpline directly, and that phone number is 718-722-3131. Again, the New York Commission on Human Rights, area code 718-722-3131. You can also file a complaint through a private attorney, and you can also contact an organization called New York Serves at 1-844-347-9244. Again, that's 1-844-347-9244 for help in finding legal services. Many thanks to the members of the New York City Veterans Alliance for sharing this information, and also to public advocate Letitia James and council member Jernane Williams, who introduced and championed this bill for veterans in New York. So it's an interesting example how, while we talk frequently on this show about the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs, there is a lot of veteran issues at the state, and in this case, even the city level. That should be of interest to veterans. So, over to you, Richard.
Yes, and another issue of ongoing interest to veterans is the issue of the VA paying for emergency medical care received by veterans in private hospitals. Earlier this year, the National Veterans Legal Services Program, NVLSP, won approximately $2 billion for hundreds of thousands of veterans who received emergency care outside the Department of Veterans Affairs and were wrongfully denied reimbursement by the VA for the emergency medical expenses they incurred. In a congressional hearing on Wednesday, June 14, 2017, VA Secretary David Shulkin announced that the VA would voluntarily withdraw its appeal in the legal case Staub versus Shulkin that required VA to reimburse these veterans. In a June press release, the NVLSP Joint Executive Director and Lead Attorney for the Staub case, Mr. Bart Stichman, stated, "We applaud Secretary Shulkin for his decision to put veterans first, to comply with the ruling, and to pay these outstanding claims for reimbursement of emergency medical expenses." This is a huge win, not just for Mr. Staub, an Air Force veteran who was left with $48,000 in medical bills after a heart attack, but for all veterans and their families, said Stichman. An estimated 373,000 veterans have waited as long as 7 years for reimbursement in emergency medical care claims. In a hearing last week, Secretary Shulkin estimated the VA will need to pay $2 billion in reimbursement to veterans in this budget cycle. And in the prior court rule filings, the VA has estimated it will have to reimburse veterans for $6.5 billion in emergency medical expenses over the next decade due to NVLSP's victory in the Staub case. I would like to thank Senator Frank Round, Senator Richard Blumenthal, and other members of the Veterans Senate Affairs Committee for their diligence in pursuing this claim, this issue, as well as our pro bono counsel, Sid Lee Austin. I would like to thank the American Legion for filing a friend of the court brief in support of our petition and the lawyers at Jones Day who drafted the brief, said Stichman. In his announcement, Shulkin said, Senator Rounds and Senator Blumenthal were right to sharply criticize VA's decision to appeal. Also on Wednesday, Secretary Shulkin announced that the VA has drafted regulation to authorize payment for Staub-related claims and has sent regulation to the Office of Management and Budget. Draft regulations must clear OMB and be published in the Federal Register before VA can begin reimbursement. VA estimates that this process could take at least 9 months. Advice for veterans. While the regulation is going through its required review process at OMB, we suggest veterans with claims for reimbursement of emergency medical expenses that were previously and finally denied because they had additional insurance should prepare a new claim, said Stichman. Veterans may find it helpful to talk with veterans service officer or advocate in preparing their claim. Veterans have 1 year to appeal a denial of reimbursement for emergency medical expenses they incurred outside the VA system. If the VA claim was denied because they had partially secondary insurance, they should keep their claim alive by appealing to the Board of Veteran Appeals. Veterans in this situation should file VA Form 21-0958. Veterans who have not yet filed a claim for reimbursement should file a formal written claim to the VA's Veterans Health Administration. Background on the case, Plaintiff Richard W. Staub is an Air Force veteran who served honorably from November 1952 to November 1956. He received the National Defense Service Medal, the Korean Service Medal, the United Nations Service Medal, and the Good Conduct Medal. This case is typical of many of the emergency medical care claims that VA has denied. Staub had a heart attack in 2010, was rushed to a non-VA hospital where he underwent open-heart surgery and incurred approximately $48,000 in emergency medical expenses. Medicare covered a portion of this medical bill, and the veteran sought VA reimbursement for the portion of the medical expenses not covered by Medicare. He requested for reimbursement of $48,000 was denied by the VA Medical Center in St. Cloud, Minnesota, because he had partial insurance coverage through Medicare. The veteran filed a notice of disagreement in May 2012. That's VA Form 21-0958. This case then went through a variety of appeals and made it to the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, where he was represented by NVLSP. Case was known as Richard W. Staub versus Robert A. McDonald, later renamed Staub versus Shulkin. In April 2016, a unanimous three-judge panel of the CAVC struck down the VA regulation that VA had been relying upon to deny reimbursement requests from veterans like Staub who had incurred emergency medical care costs outside the VA healthcare system. The court's decision rebuked the VA, emphasizing that VA's reimbursement regulation became wholly inconsistent with the governing statute when Congress amended it in 2009 with the Emergency Care Fairness Act, but thereafter the VA unlawfully declined to remedy this inconsistency. After the 2016 court win, the VA appealed to the Court of Appeals for the Federal Circuit and filed legal briefs with the Federal Circuit in an attempt to overturn ruling with CAVC. At the same time, the VA mounted two unsuccessful efforts to hotline legislation that would have invalidated the court win. In February 2017, the VA also filed a motion to stay the precedential effect of the CVAC's decision. In its written argument, the VA said it had suspended adjudication of 373,000 claims for reimbursement of emergency private health services until it could determine how to deal with the effect of the STOB decision. The VA estimated that the STOB decision would result in a financial cost of up to $273 million in 2017 and over $6.5 billion over the next decade. 2 business days later, the court summarily denied the motion. The VA continued to appeal the case. The announcement by Secretary Shulkin indicating the VA will voluntarily withdraw its appeal means that the 2016 court ruling will stand. Well, David, that's a mouthful there, and quite a victory for our men and women veterans.
It really is an amazing case, and it's going to affect, as you indicated, in the order of about 373,000 veterans who were faced with having to pay out of pocket for medical care, typically emergency medical care that they received in the private sector that should have been covered by the VA. And what's also interesting is the veteran, Richard Staub, his heart attack, where he was rushed to the hospital, a non-VA hospital, was in 2010. And this issue was just essentially resolved earlier this year, 7 years later. And actually, it's still not over because, as you said, Richard, there still have to be some implementing regulations to follow, and those haven't been, even the drafts have not been published yet. This is all about money. We've talked about this on earlier shows. This is about a lot of money. And, yeah, the federal government is living off of huge deficits. They put 2 wars on the nation's credit card, so to speak. We have $20 trillion in accumulated national debt, and then we have the VA in a situation like this where the VA is not covering medical care that they were obligated by law to cover. And what's interesting, too, is 7 years of litigation with the VA. We often hear of the VA being there to help veterans, but if you look at its long history, and this case is just another example of that, where the VA put up a really vigorous legal fight for 7 years, and it was just at the last moment when Secretary Shulkin decided, okay, there was enough of a public outcry by these veterans to back off. So, yeah, it's an important, very important issue. It's going to affect hundreds of thousands of veterans and involve, as you said, possibly as much as $6.5 billion over the next decade. So it's a story we'll continue to follow. If we have any veterans that want to share their experiences with this case, with this situation, or others, give us a call. Again, our toll-free number is 1-888-627-6008. Give us a call, 1-888-627-6008. We'd love to hear from you, hear your perspective, hear your questions, and hear your insights. We also welcome particularly calls from VA employees. If you want to call anonymously and offer your insights, maybe as a whistleblower or just someone that wants to share their insights, we certainly welcome that. We want to hear different perspectives on the VA and not appear simply to be criticizing the VA all the time. We know the VA does a lot of great things, and we certainly welcome all perspectives on this. Meanwhile, let me talk about another very important issue we've touched on some of our previous shows periodically over the last couple months, and that's an issue affecting thousands of veterans of the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan concerning the practice of open burn pits that were used by the military in those wars. And those open burn pits, burning a lot of toxic substances, have been causing lung diseases and various kinds of cancers to U.S. troops who were stationed near those pits. Our loyal listeners will recall that on our September 11th show of this year, we had an exclusive interview with the film director and producer Greg Lovett. His latest film is on the burn pits issue, and it's entitled Delay, Deny, Hope You Die, How America Poisoned Its Soldiers. And the film, as we've talked about, deals with that issue of open burn pits, and the numbers of veterans who have suffered, and some have died, very serious health problems due to the numerous toxic substances which were incinerated in those huge burn pits. And some of the pits were as large as 10 acres, burning 24 hours a day, burning metals, batteries, medical waste, even human body parts, human waste, you name it, batteries. They were burning it, and they were torching it with fuel. So they would pour fuel over it and then ignite it. And these pits would often burn 24 hours a day, every day, for months and actually years. And meanwhile, there are veterans living and working in the immediate vicinity. If you want to find out more about Greg Lovett's film, check it out on Facebook. Go to Facebook, type in the words Burn Pit Documentary in the Facebook search engine. The premiere showing was back in October, October 9th in Los Angeles, and since then there have been quite a few screenings in other select theaters across the country. These screenings are based on a crowdfunding basis. In other words, you have to sell a certain minimum number of tickets before the film is actually shown. If you go to the website, either Facebook and type in Burn Pit Documentary, then you'll find the Facebook page for the film, or you can go to the website tug.com, which is T-U-G-G.com, tug.com, which is the crowdfunding resource for films, including this film, a lot of independent films. There was a screening on Thursday, October 19th in Tampa, which I attended, and another one, which I was the main promoter for, Wednesday, November 1st in Brandon, Florida. Richard and I attended that one. There are more showings of the Burn Pit Documentary scheduled or tentatively scheduled for other cities around the country. You can find those out from tug.com or Facebook. But if you're interested, in sponsoring the film in your hometown, again, go to tug.com and you can become a promoter. Find out more about that. You can also communicate with Greg Lovett through the Facebook page that I've mentioned. So it's a very important film. I urge you to check it out. Right now, there are over 100,000 veterans of Iraq and Afghanistan wars who have signed up for the VA's burn pit registry. But we also know anecdotally that a lot of veterans have not, because there are a lot of problems with the registry. It's already been criticized that it's really not gathering the kind of accurate data needed for authentic medical research. But nevertheless, it's there. It's a way for veterans to bring to the VA's attention, at least in some manner, the impact of these burn pits. So,
you know, David, if I may.
Sure.
The other day when my son and I were playing with golf with this Vietnam vet who I talked about earlier in the show, we were also joined by a young Iraqi veteran who went through the burn pits. And we started talking about it, and it just so happened we had teed off at about 7 o'clock in the morning, and throughout the entire morning, we were stuck in a fog that was as thick as pea soup. I mean, literally, you could not see more than 50 yards in front of you. Well, this young Iraqi veteran, when he was describing the burn pits, said, well, you know, he said, I remember the comment, he said, Mr. Hurley, he said, you see what we're in right now? I said, yeah. He goes, that's what the burn pits was all about. I said, you got to be kidding me. He said, no. He said, this stuff was as thick. And then he mentioned to me, you know, the odor that was coming off it. And there was no way to avoid it. I mean, you know, it's not like you could go drive and get away from it. You were stuck having to work in this environment. And what's important for our listeners to realize is that, as David said earlier about the respiratory illnesses that have been created, the cancers, the tumors, et cetera, as a result of the exposure to these burn pits, and this comment has been made before by some of our guests, this is our this generation's Agent Orange. And unless we want to wait the 20-some-odd years that our Vietnam vets had to wait in order to get covered, you know, the presumptive coverage for their disease as a result of Agent Orange, we need to act now. And that's why seeing this film is so important, because, you know, David and I can sit here and we can talk about it all we want. We can, you know, try to describe it to you, but you really need to witness it for yourself so that you have a better understanding about what these men and women were exposed to, and how, you know, one of the things I took back from that film is that, you know, they had plans to put in these incinerators over there, which would have alleviated these burn pits. But because of the cost, actually saving money, they decided just to torch all these areas and turn them into burn pits and create this hazardous condition for our veterans. So I really encourage anybody who wants to, you know, has any inkling to kind of get into this and understand what it's all about, to try to find this film and view it. Especially, you know, if you've got, you know, neighbors or family members who have been exposed by these burn pits. You know, I'm sure there are men and women out there who maybe they don't appreciate to what extent that they've been exposed, but the reality is that they have been exposed, and there are medical consequences as a result of that exposure. And so, you know, we need to get Congress to act so that the VA is going to start covering our men and women who were just horrifically exposed to these conditions. So, you know, yep. I know we've been talking about this now for quite a while. Yeah, go ahead, David.
For our listeners, go back and listen to our October 9th, 2017 podcast. Our guest that evening was Lauren Price, a Navy veteran, and she is the co-founder of a group called Veteran Warriors. And Lauren served in Iraq for about 13 months, if I recall, and she had various duties. One of her duties was as a convoy driver, but in her duties it also subjected her to being in the vicinity of these burn pits, so she suffers from the burn pit injuries. And we've talked to other veterans as well, like you've mentioned, Richard. So it's an important film. A picture speaks a thousand words, as the cliche says, and it's really true. You really won't fully appreciate, just listening to Richard and I talk about the film, see it. Again, you go to TUGG.com, T-U-G-G.com. Find out if it's showing at a theater near you. If it's not, think about becoming a promoter of that film, which basically means you help sell the tickets, or you purchase tickets, and reach the minimum, which is usually somewhere between 75 tickets and maybe 120 tickets. It depends on the theater. Most are going to be between about 70 and 90 tickets that have to be sold, but it's well worth it. Meanwhile, if you want to watch, 2 to 3 minute trailers of the film, of selected portions of the film, go to Facebook, type in Burn Pit Documentary in the Facebook search engine, and you'll find the Facebook page that Greg Lovett created. A lot of good comments from people around the country on that page. So I urge you to look into that and help. Share your feedback. And if you know other veterans that are affected, communicate. There are burn pit organizations out there, and it's a matter of working together, because the ultimate goal is so that the VA recognizes that these respiratory diseases and various cancers, they should be treated by the VA, and the veterans need to receive disability compensation for the injuries that they've suffered as a result. So it's an important topic. We'll continue to cover that in future weeks. So, Richard, what else is new and on your mind this evening?
Well, I guess one of the things that the frustration that I continue to see our side, the legal side, that we go through with representing our veterans. I can't help, the frustration I feel is one thing. I can't even imagine how it is for some of our, veterans who've been fighting for so many years. And I continue to see the same thing over and over and over again. And, having been in private practice dealing with insurance companies for as long as I did prior to getting involved with VA law, I get back to the same thing about, the VA is just nothing more than a big insurance company with a pile of cash that they just don't want to part with. Although there's plenty of cash to compensate our men and women, the VA, for whatever reason, doesn't want to spend it. They prefer to give out nice fat bonuses to people working in the VA rather than compensate our men and women. And I continue again to see, decisions where, the VA throws out a bone. I got another case today of a Vietnam vet. He's a helicopter pilot. He's got dementia. He's in a wheelchair. We filed an initial claim for him about 6-7 months ago, and he got a decision today for about service connecting his condition, and they threw out a 10% rating to him. And his wife and his fellow's a minister up in Atlanta, and his wife said to me, Mr. Hurley, it just seems like all they do is throw us a bone. I said, yeah, well, that's exactly what they did. And, it's just a shame that we have to continue to see this over and over and over again. And we're passing all this great legislation. We've got all this new accountability legislation. We've had but nothing is changing. We got 1 year of Donald Trump so far, and nothing has changed. And all our veterans have told me over and over again that they voted for Donald Trump hoping that something was going to change in the VA. And guess what? Nothing has changed. If anything, it's becoming more complicated and more stifling to our veterans. Donald Trump loves to litigate and not pay his debts. So he's succeeding that with the VA now. I know I'm getting a little political here, but it's very upsetting.
I'd have to say that I don't think we can hang all this on Donald Trump. I think that what you're dealing with, particularly on the appeals reform legislation, the ideas which were passed into law this year, those were ideas that the VA had been pushing for a number of years, long before Donald Trump was elected. And it just so happens that they finally got enough support in Congress to pass that legislation. But those ideas predate Trump being in office. But I think it's still going to be at least a year and a half before we start seeing the impact of the appeals so-called reform legislation. And even then, I hate to say it, I don't want to be pessimistic about it, but, listen to our guest last week, John Wells, and he agrees that I think the informed view is going to be this legislation is really not going to be helping veterans. If, to the extent it speeds anything up, it's probably going to be cases where the VA is finding ways to deny claims. But from another perspective, we had filmmaker Rick Burns on our show back a few weeks ago, and he had just finished a documentary on the VA called The Human Cost of War. And he spoke about, one of the most important social contracts, I think that was the word he used, social contracts between Americans and between the government, the American government and the people, is the social contract or obligation to take care of veterans who have put themselves on the line to serve the country and have come back disabled in some respect, physically and or psychologically, and there should be considered a moral obligation to take care of these veterans with medical care and fair and appropriate disability compensation. And it's a system that has gone through cycles of scandal, some attempted reform, some periods of lack of media attention, usually between wars. You know, but we launched into two wars after 9/11, the Afghanistan war in the fall of 2001, and then the entirely voluntary invasion of Iraq in 2003, and there was no planning. There was very little planning for those wars, certainly for the Iraq war, but there was even less planning on the part of the VA for the millions of veterans that would come back from the war, and the many claims, disability claims, and the veterans needing treatment. So that poor planning has contributed to the problems that we see now, and then added to the fact that the VA is still taking care of veterans from prior wars, and we've seen, you know, the long-term effects of Agent Orange, but other disabilities from the older, the aging now Vietnam veteran population. So there's a lot of things, and I think part of our objective is we not only do we help veterans on an individual basis, but one of the purposes of this show is to get the word out, give people another venue for receiving news and also to share their insights. And we appreciate you know, our listeners who may wish to offer their insights. And so anyway, that's I just wanted to share those other perspectives. As we draw to the close of our show, Richard, do you want to talk about the Coaching into Care program for veterans?
Yeah, we like to keep plugging that. Coaching into Care program. If you are a family member of a veteran who has left the service and is having a tough time transitioning into civilian life, please be aware of the VA's program called Coaching into Care. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching into Care offers free coaching to help your veteran. Again, that's to help you help your veteran. Give the program a call. It's toll-free, 1-888-823-7458. Its hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m., 8 p.m. Again, the VA's Coaching into Care number is 1-888-823-7458. And again, this coaching is to help you help your veteran. Very important. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, the Veterans Crisis Line can help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Thanks. Well, it's been, hopefully, for our listeners, an informative hour. We've talked about the healthcare system, the appeals reform, so-called reform system, legislation in New York City to help veterans, the very important STAW court decision dealing with VA reimbursement of emergency medical care for veterans who receive care in the private sector, and some other topics tonight. I hope you've enjoyed listening to the show. We'd like to thank all of you for doing so. We'd like to thank our show sponsors. Our sponsors of the Veterans News Hour include the American Legion Post 303 of Bonita Springs, Florida, Mr. Charles Newman of Florida, and, of course, Corey and Hurley Law Group. We represent veterans and disability cases involving the VA. You can find out more about the law firm at the website CoreyandHurleyLawGroup.com. We'd also like to thank our show producer here at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We'd like to invite listeners to become show guests, show sponsors, and advertisers. Our contact information is on our show's website, which is BBSRadio.com/ The Veterans News Hour. You can find also archive podcasts of our prior shows for your enjoyment. So thanks for listening. Please tune in next week, same time, same station, for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, hope you have a great week. Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.